Welcome to another deep dive with us. Today, we are going to be going into the world of pediatric sleep apnea.
Ooh, that's a good one.
And I think a lot of people, when they hear sleep apnea, they're thinking of adults.
Right.
Like older adults.
Yeah.
Struggling to breathe in their sleep.
Mm-hmm.
But as it turns out,
yeah,
this can really impact kids.
Oh, absolutely.
And we're looking at some research here.
Yes.
That could really change how we manage
yeah.
sleep apnea in kids.
What's really exciting is that we're looking at simple blood or urine tests
wow.
that doctors could use right up front to see if a child might have sleep apnea.
So that could replace those
potentially
overnight sleep studies.
Yeah.
That are so
they're
expensive and difficult,
yeah.
especially for kids.
Oh, totally.
That's huge.
Yeah.
But so before we get too far into it.
Sure.
Can you just give us a little background on
yeah.
what is pediatric obstructive sleep apnea mm-hmm. and why should yeah. we be worried about it?
So pediatric obstructive sleep apnea, or OSA for short, is basically when a child's upper airway gets blocked
okay.
while they're sleeping either partially or completely. And you can kind of think of it like a garden hose
okay.
with a kink in it.
Gotcha.
The air just can't flow through properly. And that leads to either these pauses in breathing, which we call apneas, or shallow breathing called hypopneas.
Okay.
And this can happen over and over again throughout the night.
Wow.
Which disrupts their sleep and means that their body is not getting enough oxygen.
So they're basically struggling to breathe while they're sleeping.
Exactly.
That sounds really scary.
It is. It's definitely concerning for both the child and the parents.
And how common is this in kids?
It's actually more common than a lot of people think.
Really?
Globally, it affects somewhere between 1.2% to 5.7% of children.
Wow.
And those numbers are probably even higher.
Yeah.
Because it's often not diagnosed.
Yeah. You mentioned that it's difficult to diagnose.
Yeah.
So what are the ways that they do it now?
So right now, the gold standard way to diagnose OSA is to do an overnight sleep study.
Okay.
It's called a polysomnography.
Mm.
And while it's a very thorough test that gives us a lot of information,
yeah.
it's also super expensive.
Okay.
It requires special equipment and people to run it.
Mm-hmm.
And it can be really inconvenient for families.
Well, especially with young kids.
Yeah.
I can't imagine trying to get them to cooperate with something like that.
Not easy.
So I understand why researchers are looking for a better way.
Totally.
So tell me about the research that we're looking at today.
Okay.
What did they do and what kind of methods did they use?
So this study that was published in a journal called Archivos de Bronconeumologia
okay.
uses a really cool technique called Data Independent Acquisition Mass Spectrometry, or yeah. DIA mass spectrometry for short.
Okay.
Which basically acts like a high-powered microscope for proteins.
Okay.
So the researchers can see and measure all the different proteins in a sample. And in this case, the samples were blood and urine from kids.
This protein microscope sounds really powerful.
It is.
So what's the advantage of using this method
right.
over some of the more traditional ways of doing this kind of work?
So DIA mass spectrometry has a few key advantages over older methods for analyzing proteins.
Okay.
First of all, it's unbiased, so we don't need to know what proteins we're looking for ahead of time.
Okay.
We can just cast a wide net and see what we find.
Okay.
Second, it's super sensitive, so we can detect even tiny amounts of protein.
Mm-hmm.
And finally, it really cuts down on variability.
Okay.
Which means that the results are more reliable and reproducible.
So it's like a more powerful and reliable tool
exactly.
for analyzing these samples.
Right.
So what did they actually find in this study?
Okay, so the researchers looked at a group of 28 kids who had OSA.
Okay.
And they had mild, moderate, and severe OSA.
Uh-huh.
And they compared them to a control group of 12 kids who didn't have OSA. And they found a whopping 524 proteins in the blood and 1,453 proteins in the urine.
Wow.
And out of all those, 383 proteins were found in both.
Wow, that's a lot of data.
Yeah, it is.
So what did they do with all that information?
Well, as the severity of the OSA increased,
okay.
they saw some interesting changes in certain proteins.
Okay.
For example, in the blood, 34 proteins increased in amount.
Okay.
And 10 proteins decreased with increasing OSA severity.
Mm-hmm.
And in the urine, 124 proteins increased.
Okay.
And 64 decreased.
So it seems like there's a connection
Absolutely.
Between the levels of certain proteins
yeah.
and how bad the sleep apnea is.
Exactly.
And that makes these proteins potential biomarkers.
You got it.
Can you explain a little bit more about what a biomarker is?
Sure. So you can think of a biomarker like a fingerprint for a specific disease.
Okay.
So if certain proteins change mm-hmm. in a predictable way as OSA gets worse,
yeah.
then they could be used as a reliable way to diagnose it.
So instead of doing that overnight sleep study, you could just give a blood or urine sample,
Right.
and then they could look at these protein levels to see if you have sleep apnea
Exactly.
and how bad it is.
Yeah.
Wow. So which proteins are we talking about here?
Well, two proteins really stood out to the researchers in this study.
Okay.
One is called cathepsin Z,
Okay.
which is involved in the activity of immune cells,
Okay.
particularly macrophages, which play a big role in inflammation. And they found that cathepsin Z levels in both the blood and urine went up as sleep apnea got worse.
Wow, it's the same protein in both the blood and the urine.
Yeah.
That seems like it's a sign that something is going on.
Definitely.
Could this be related to inflammation?
It very well could be. There seems to be a strong connection
Yeah.
between sleep apnea and inflammation in the body.
Okay.
It's kind of like a chain reaction that gets set off by the condition.
Chain reaction.
Yeah.
Can you walk me through that?
Yeah. So it all starts with those repeated episodes of low oxygen
Okay.
called intermittent hypoxia. That happens when the airway gets blocked during sleep,
Okay.
and that triggers a stress response in the body
Okay.
and leads to something called oxidative stress.
Okay, I've heard that term before, but I'm not really sure what it means.
So imagine that your cells are constantly being exposed to things that make them rust.
Okay.
That's basically what oxidative stress is.
Okay.
It's like an imbalance between free radicals, which are like those rusting agents,
Okay.
and antioxidants, which are like protective agents.
So it's like a cellular rusting process
Pretty
that
much.
can actually damage cells and tissues.
Exactly. And
Huh.
that oxidative stress then leads to inflammation throughout the body,
Okay.
like a fire that keeps getting bigger.
I see.
And that's where these immune
It's
proteins,
okay.
like cathepsin Z, come in.
Hmm.
They're part of the body's natural defense system,
Gotcha.
trying to clean up the mess caused by that oxidative stress and inflammation.
Okay, so they're like firefighters trying to
Exactly.
put out the fire.
That's a great way to think about it.
So that's cathepsin Z, but you said there was another protein
Oh, right.
that they were interested in,
Yep.
SHBG. What is that one all about?
So SHBG stands for sex hormone binding globulin.
Okay.
And it's a protein that sticks to sex hormones like testosterone and estrogen
Okay.
and controls how active they are in the body.
So how does that relate to sleep apnea?
Well, unlike cathepsin Z, SHBG levels actually went down
Okay.
as sleep apnea got
So
worse.
one goes up, one goes down as
Exactly.
sleep apnea gets worse.
That's right.
What does that tell us about the condition?
Well, it suggests that there's a much deeper connection
Okay.
between sleep apnea and overall health,
Okay.
particularly hormones and metabolism. And I think that's a good place to stop for now.
Okay.
We can dive more into that in the next part.
Sounds good. So we were talking about how cathepsin Z goes up and SHBG goes down
Right.
as sleep apnea gets worse in kids.
Yeah.
What does that actually mean?
Well, it's really interesting because it suggests that sleep apnea is about more than just sleep. It's actually tied to things like hormones and metabolism.
Okay.
And let's start with SHBG.
Okay.
We know that it regulates how active sex hormones like testosterone and estrogen are, and those hormones affect a lot of different things in the body.
Right, like growth and development and
Exactly.
mood and metabolism.
Yeah, all of that.
So if SHBG levels are low, that could mess things up.
It definitely could. It's like throwing a wrench in the works.
And what kind of problems could that cause for kids with sleep apnea?
Well, we're still learning a lot about this, but we know that hormone imbalances can be a big deal.
Right, especially for kids who are still growing and developing.
Exactly.
So what kind of things could happen?
Well, for example, low SHBG levels have been linked to insulin resistance,
Okay.
which is a big factor in metabolic disorders like type 2 diabetes.
Wow, so sleep apnea in kids could mean they're more likely to have problems with their metabolism later on.
That's a real concern.
That's a big deal.
It is, and it shows us that sleep apnea is more than just a sleep problem.
Yeah.
It's connected to all these other aspects of a child's health.
Yeah, so early diagnosis is really important.
Absolutely. The sooner we can catch it, the better.
So you mentioned that these findings need more research.
Yeah.
What are the next steps in actually confirming that these protein biomarkers work?
Right. So the researchers actually took a step to validate their findings.
Okay.
They used a different test called an ELISA,
Okay.
which stands for enzyme-linked immunosorbent assay. It's a mouthful,
Yeah.
but basically it confirmed what they saw with the mass spectrometry.
Okay.
The ELISA showed higher cathepsin Z and lower SHBG in kids with more severe sleep apnea.
So it's like having two different pieces of evidence that point to the same thing.
Exactly. It makes the findings much stronger.
Yeah. So what else needs to be done?
Well, this study was a great start, but we need larger studies with more diverse groups of kids to make sure these biomarkers really work for everyone.
Right. So kids of all ages and backgrounds, not just a small group.
Right.
So beyond just diagnosis, could these biomarkers help us understand how sleep apnea works in the first place?
Absolutely. This opens up a whole new world of research possibilities.
Yep.
For example, we could look at whether targeting cathepsin Z or SHBG could help treat sleep apnea or even address the underlying inflammation and oxidative stress.
So instead of just treating the symptoms, we can actually get at the root of the problem.
That's the goal.
Are there any other research directions you're excited about?
Well, one area that's really interesting is the connection between sleep apnea and the gut microbiome.
The gut microbiome.
Yeah, so that's all the bacteria that live in our gut.
Okay.
And research is showing that when the balance of those bacteria gets messed up, it can actually contribute to inflammation throughout the body.
Really?
Yeah, and that could make sleep apnea worse.
So it's like this whole cascade.
Yeah.
Sleep apnea disrupts sleep that leads to oxidative stress and inflammation, which then messes with the gut microbiome.
It's all connected.
Wow. That's amazing.
It is. And it makes you wonder if things that help the gut microbiome, like probiotics or changing your diet, could also help with sleep apnea.
That's a great question.
Yeah, and researchers are definitely looking into it.
This is all so fascinating. We started with a simple question.
Right.
Can a blood or urine test diagnose sleep apnea in kids?
Yeah.
And we've uncovered this whole world of complexity.
It's incredible how much we're learning.
But it's also really hopeful because it seems like this research could totally change how we deal with pediatric sleep apnea.
I agree. It's really exciting to see where this research leads.
So let's shift gears a little bit now.
Okay.
And talk about what all of this means
okay.
for the future of diagnosing and managing pediatric sleep apnea. Okay, so we've talked about the science. But what does all this mean for parents and caregivers?
Yeah, that's the important part, right?
Right. Like, if they're worried about their kid,
mm-hmm.
what should they be looking out for?
Well, parents are usually the first ones to notice that something's off with their child's sleep.
Okay.
So some of the common signs of sleep apnea in kids are things like loud snoring.
Okay.
Pauses in breathing while they're sleeping.
Mm-hmm.
Restless sleep, sweating at night.
Okay.
Waking up a lot.
So those are all nighttime things.
Yeah.
What about during the day?
So there are daytime symptoms too.
Okay.
And those can be a bit trickier to spot.
Okay.
But just as important.
Like what?
So things like being really sleepy during the day.
Okay.
Trouble concentrating at school.
Mm-hmm.
Being hyperactive, mood swings.
Okay.
Even bedwetting.
Wow. It's crazy to think that sleep apnea could look like just normal kids stuff.
Yeah. It can be hard to tell sometimes.
So if a parent is worried that their child might have sleep apnea, what should they do?
The first thing is to talk to their pediatrician.
Okay.
Tell them about the symptoms you're seeing both at night and during the day.
Okay.
And the doctor can then check the child's overall health and see if they need more tests.
So it's all about early intervention.
Exactly. The earlier we can catch it, the better.
Because what happens if sleep apnea in kids goes untreated?
Well, untreated sleep apnea can really affect a child's development and their well-being.
In what ways?
Well, obviously, it messes with their sleep.
Right.
But it can also lead to problems with their heart.
Really?
Yeah. Things like high blood pressure.
Wow.
Strain on the heart.
Okay.
And even a higher risk of heart disease later in life.
And kids' brains are still developing.
That's right.
So I bet that sleep apnea can cause problems with thinking and learning, too.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Studies have shown that kids with sleep apnea often have trouble with things like attention memory and learning.
So that can affect their schoolwork.
Definitely. They might have trouble focusing in class.
Okay.
They might be hyperactive,
mm-hmm.
and their grades might suffer.
It sounds like untreated sleep apnea can have some pretty serious consequences.
It definitely can.
But this research we've been talking about offers some hope, right?
It.
What does the future look like for kids with sleep apnea?
I'm actually really optimistic about the future.
That's great.
With these new diagnostic tools we've been talking about, like simple blood or urine tests,
right.
we can identify kids with sleep apnea much sooner.
Okay.
And if we can intervene early,
yeah.
we can prevent a lot of those long-term health problems.
So we can actually change these kids' lives for the better.
Exactly.
That's amazing.
It is, and it all starts with awareness.
Okay.
Parents, caregivers, healthcare professionals, all working together to recognize the signs
mm-hmm.
and get kids the help they need.
So it's really about giving everyone the tools and the knowledge to advocate for these kids.
Absolutely. That's what it's all about.
This has been such an eye-opening deep dive.
It has been.
We started with a simple question.
Right.
Can a blood test help diagnose sleep apnea in kids?
Yeah.
And we ended up going so much deeper than that.
It's amazing what you can learn when you really dig into something.
And for our listeners out there,
yeah.
The main thing to remember is that sleep apnea in children is serious.
It is.
But we are making huge progress in understanding it, diagnosing it, and treating it.
And we're only going to get better at it.
And early intervention is key.
Couldn't agree more.
So if you're concerned about a child,
yeah,
don't hesitate to talk to a doctor.
Absolutely. That's the first step.
Well, this has been another deep dive. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.